The Sunstone Theological Society presents Blacks Within Mormonism After 10 Years, Promises, Progress, and Persistent Problems. Recorded live at the 1988 Sunstone Theological Symposium, held August 17th through the 20th, 1988. We take you to the University Park Hotel in Salt Lake City, Utah, where the program is just now beginning.
I guess this first session, they're having a little trouble people finding the place. Obviously, I am not Lydia Nibley Schoenfield, but we'd like to welcome you here. This is Section 8, Blacks Within Mormonism After 10 Years, Promises, Progress, and Persistent Problems. Our lecturer will be Dr. Newell Bringhurst. He received his Ph.D. at University of California at Davis. He's now teaching at the College of Sequoias in Visalia, California. He teaches both history and political science. He's published an important work on the blacks and Mormonism, as well as he did his doctoral research on this area, Saints, Slaves, and Blacks, The Changing Place of Blacks Within Mormonism. Very pivotal and important work for this subject. He's also published a book on Brigham Young, a biography of Brigham Young and the American Frontier, which has received wide circulation. And at present, he's working on a project on the history of Fawn Brodie, as well as other projects. So it's with pleasure that we introduce Newell Bringhurst.
Yeah, thanks, Howard. Howard and I go way back. We grew up together out in Midvale, Utah. I don't know if you were at the plenary session last night. Howard and I were sitting there when Ruffin Bridgeforth mentioned the fact that he when he went to speak to this ward out in Midvale and they were passing the sacrament, and they passed over him because they didn't really think he was a member of the church, he and another black person. And afterwards, Howard and I said, was that our old ward? Was that the Midvale Fourth Ward out in Midvale? And so it's good to be here. I should mention one or two other things before I give my paper, is that the title of my paper has changed slightly. As I got working through the material, I the title I gave the Sunstone People, which is mentioned in the program, was kind of a generic title, and the actual title of my paper and the subject is The Image of Blacks as Prime Instruments of Mormon Growth and Expansion, as presented in the Church News. So the focus is how blacks have been presented in the Church News. That's the title. So I'll just go ahead from there. On May 21st, 1988, the Church News carried a feature story entitled Nigeria Marks Two Milestones. The first milestone involved the formation of a new stake or a new mission in Nigeria, the Nigeria Eba Mission. Of greater significance, however, was a second milestone, namely the establishment of the Aba Nigeria stake, consisting of six wards and three branches. This stake's formation, in the words of the news, was a milestone in church history, not only because it was the first stake in Western Africa, but also because it was the first stake in which all of the priesthood holders are black. Carefully noted was the fact that this event took place on the eve of the 10th anniversary of the 1978 Black Priesthood Revelation. Moreover, the special significance attached to the event was reflected in the presence of Elder Neil A. Maxwell of the Council of Twelve, who traveled to Nigeria to preside. The way that the Church News covered these developments in Nigeria was reflective of this periodical's general tendency to present blacks as primary facilitators of general Mormon growth and expansion throughout the world. This image of blacks as prime facilitators was presented with great vigor in the years immediately following the 1978 Black Revelation. The Church News assumption of this role is noteworthy for several reasons. First, the news status as an official Latter-day Saint publication, whose current circulation exceeds 220,000, makes it a major significant influence within the church. Secondly, the church news, because it's published weekly, in contrast to the monthly publication schedule of other major Latter-day Saint publications, namely the Ensign, New Era, and Friend, is more current and comprehensive in its presentation of church news. Finally, the church news is the most vivid church medium in presenting such news, in that it is written in an effective, readable style and is profusely illustrated. In presenting blacks as prime instruments of Mormon growth, the church news looked to black Africa. In December 1979, the news carried an article proclaiming the church spreads in Nigeria, Ghana. The seeds of the gospel, it proclaimed, have sprouted and taken hold like tree shoots in a rainforest. It noted that hundreds of converts had come into the church. In a striking photograph, the news showed dozens of black Africans lined up along a riverbank awaiting baptism. A second article in February 1981 described the appointment of the first West Africans to serve missions. These African appointees, according to David B. Haight of the 12, were helping the church fulfill its charge to carry the message of hope and salvation to every nation, kindred, and people. The church news in a June 1984 essay through its Missionary Moments column noted the desire of a group of African tribal leaders to be baptized in the church. Later that same year, the news published an illustrated cover story entitled Africa, Gentle Growth in Nigeria and Ghana, which outlined Mormon progress in these countries up to 1984. The role of blacks as instruments of church growth in other parts of Africa was also noted by the news. J. Richard Clark of the First Quorum of the 70 and president of the South Africa Cape Town Mission, speaking through the news, attributed South African church growth to the black revelation of 1978. Expanding on this theme, the news itself asserted that, quote, since the 1978 revelation, a number of thriving black branches of the church have sprung up in South Africa. It described activity in a Soweto branch and in a second branch in a black residential area just outside of Durban. By August of 1985, this latter branch, the one just outside of Durban, had grown to 300 members, thanks in large measure to the efforts of two Zulu member missionaries, both women. Elsewhere in Africa, the expansion of Mormon missionary activity was also noted. In the Central African nation of Zaire, the establishment there of a Latter-day Saint mission in April 1987 was accompanied by a church news proclamation, quote, Zaire's people thirsty for the gospel. In October 1987, the news announced the visit to Africa of Apostle Melvin J. Ashton, who dedicated Zaire, along with Liberia and the Ivory Coast, for the purposes of preaching the gospel. Also noted in late 1987 and early 1988 was Mormon expansion into the Mascarene Islands of Mauritius, Reunion, and Madagascar. Both of these are located off the coast of eastern Africa. There was also renewed activity in two African nations in which the church had previously been active, namely Zimbabwe and Namibia. In Zimbabwe, formerly known as Rhodesia, there was the appointment of local black Africans as full-time missionaries. Namibia, or Southwest Africa, was reopened to missionary activity in January 1988. In response to all such activity, the church news proclaimed, Africa is emerging rapidly as a new gospel frontier. The church news also pointed to other frontiers of activity amongst blacks. The Dominican Republic, characterized by the news as, quote, and I'm quoting here, 98% black, unquote, was opened up to proselytizing work in 1978. The following year, the church commenced missionary work in Puerto Rico. In March 1981, President Spencer W. Kimball made a historic visit to the Caribbean, meeting with church members in both the Dominican Republic and Puerto Rico. The Church News described the Caribbean region as a new frontier for church work, noting that the Black Revelation opened doors for missionary work to begin in full force in the Caribbean, where many people are Black or of Black ancestry. In July 1981, the Church News noted that the LDS population, in what it described as the, quote, heavily Black nation of the Dominican Republic, has leaped from zero to more than 3,000. Primary credit for this growth was given to the new policy on the priesthood. According to one local church leader, prior to 1978, we could not proselytize among the Blacks, a real problem since the great majority of Dominicans have some Black ancestry. The 1978 priesthood announcement, he added, lifted a great cloud from our minds. Carefully noted was the phenomenal growth in the Dominican Republic, totaling 8,000 converts by 1985 and 12,000 by early 1987. Mormon progress in other parts of the Caribbean was also closely monitored by the Church News. In April 1983, Thomas S. Monson of the Council of Twelve traveled to this region, visiting the predominantly Black nation of Haiti and Jamaica. This was a historic occasion in that it marked the first time that an apostle had visited these two islands. While there, Elder Monson dedicated Haiti for the preaching of the gospel. Concurrent Mormon activity in Jamaica was the subject of a Church News cover story published in January 1984. Haiti had grown by August 1984 to 550 church members, enough to justify the formation of the Haiti Port-au-Prince Mission. This nation, by July 1987, boasted a total membership of 1,200. Mormon activity in other Caribbean islands, namely the Caymans, the Lesser Antilles, Bermuda, and the Bahamas, was also carefully chronicled in the Church News. Adjacent to the Caribbean, this periodical also noted Mormon growth in the predominantly Black Central American nation of Belize. As noteworthy as Africa and the Caribbean were as frontiers of Mormon Black activity, Brazil was of greater importance. In discussing the effects of the 1978 priesthood revelation, the Church News, in a recently published special 10th anniversary article, pointed to the increase and growth of the Brazilian church from 50,000 to over 300,000. This growth, as you're perhaps aware, has made Brazil the third largest nation in terms of church population, ranking just behind the United States and Mexico. According to the news, the 1978 revelation opened doors in Brazil. In addition, the dedication of the São Paulo Temple in October 1978 was, in the words of the news, another major milestone. Francis M. Gibbons, Brazilian area president, was even more direct, asserting that the growth in Brazil would not have been possible without the revelation. Reflective of its significant Black population, Brazil in November 1978 gave the church its first Black member of a stake presidency in the person of Helvecchio Martins. In a feature article entitled, quote, First Black is Called to Stake Presidency, the Church News described Martins' installation as second counselor in the Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, Natore branch, stake. In January 1987, Martins was made president of the Northern Brazil Fortaleza Mission, a region with a heavy Black population. The Church News also chronicled Mormon progress amongst blacks living outside the Third World. Speaking in general terms, the news noted that that most larger metropolitan areas within the United States, Canada, and England have steadily growing members of blacks, adding that many congregations are becoming significantly integrated and a few are now predominantly black. Specific situations involving blacks in the United States was also described. In the predominantly black community of Oakland, California, the Church News announced the inauguration of a missionary program in which personalized copies of the Book of Mormon were given to individuals interested in the church. The result was increased efficiency, by which door-to-door tracting was greatly reduced. In 1981, the news announced church efforts to approach inner-city youths in New York City through the development of a textile design program, a joint venture sponsored by the New York City Mormon Visitor Center and a local technical college. A year and a half later, the Church News carried a cover story describing the formation in Chicago of three church-sponsored Boy Scout troops designed for deaf scouts and open to inner-city youths, both Mormon and non-Mormon. Turning to Los Angeles, the news described the growth of that community's inner-city stake. According to stake president William W. Tanner, much of this growth came from blacks. He noted, for example, that 15% to 20% of the Wilshire ward was black, a development that had occurred since the 1978 revelation. Moving to the Deep South, the Church News carried an illustrated feature article describing the growth of a small inner city racially mixed branch in Birmingham, Alabama, under the leadership of a black branch president, Clement Biggs. Mormon efforts to reach out for black Haitian refugees in the Miami, Florida area was the subject of a Church News cover story that appeared in January 1985. In overall terms, therefore, the Church News during the past 10 years has presented a vivid portrait of blacks as prime instruments of Mormon expansion and growth. Affirming this view has been Apostle Dallin H. Oaks, who through a recent Church News article pointed to the 1978 black revelation, stating, quote, "It is difficult to overstate its importance in the fulfillment of divine command that the gospel must go to every nation, kindred, and people." He suggested a direct correlation between Mormon activity among blacks and general church expansion, noting that overall membership in the church has grown by 62% in the decade subsequent to the revelation, that is going from 4 million in 1978 to 6.5 million by June 1988. He asked, is how accurate has the Church News been in presenting blacks as prime instruments of Mormon growth and expansion? In terms of total membership growth, it appears that the news has overstated its case. For example, church growth in Nigeria and Ghana has been uneven. These two black African nations enjoyed highly visible Mormon activity immediately after the black revelation of 1978. Initial Mormon missionary activity couldn't keep pace with the hundreds of Africans expressing strong interest in the church and its teachings, particularly in various rural villages. This optimism was reflected in the various accounts published in the Church News during the late 1970s and early 1980s. Such optimism was evident in accounts published elsewhere, namely in The Ensign and in the published personal recollections of Rendell Mabee, one of the first church representatives to work in Western Africa. That is through his book, which I know is out here for sale, Brother to Brother, which was published in 1984 by Deseret Book. However, church growth in Nigeria and Ghana apparently leveled off by the mid-1980s. The total membership in these two black African nations only experienced a modest increase from about 2,000 in 1981 to about 3,000 in 1983. The growth of church membership in Nigeria, however, has apparently picked up during the late 1980s, with this nation claiming between 8,500 and 10,000 Mormons by the time of the formation of the Nigeria Aba Stake in May 1988. Although it's interesting to note that the Deseret News 1987 Church Almanac claims a total of just 5,500, an additional 3,000 for Ghana. Most recent growth, moreover, according to the Church News, has come primarily in the cities where the church is most strongly established, whereas activity in outlying villages, areas of early missionary success, has apparently fallen off, has apparently languished. Church growth among South African blacks has also been mixed. The most significant church related in this region, of course, was the dedication of the South African Temple in August of 1985. The way this event was covered in the church news seemed to reflect Mormon racial harmony and portend future church growth. The dedication was the subject of a cover story, and in a striking front page photograph, the church news showed black and white Latter-day Saints actually embracing following the dedicatory ceremony. This scene of racial harmony, according to the news, and I'm quoting here, quote, bore no evidence of the turmoil and strife occurring in other areas of the country. Whites, blacks, coloreds, and Indians, continued the news, stood in line together, transcending ethnic and language barriers, and in the temple sat side by side. However, even among South African Latter-day Saints, racial harmony was far from absolute. For example, David Bly, a Mormon journalist and former missionary, who revisited South Africa in 1986 and wrote a feature story for This People magazine. You're perhaps familiar with This People, who's recently reborn, I guess, is, so to speak. And in its initial issue, it had a whole issue devoted to the revelation 10 years later. And in the article that Bly wrote, he found, quote, enthusiasm for open relations among the races, not shared by all in the church. In the Pretoria ward, he noted, quote, enthusiasm for closer relations seemed more on the side of the blacks and the coloreds than it did the whites, unquote. Such white Mormon attitudes were of apparent concern to President Spencer W. Kimball when he addressed a South Africa area conference in October 1978 on the subject of kicking against the pricks. He proclaimed, quote, do not stifle the work of the Lord, warning that those who fight against it will find disillusionment and misery. The works, designs, and progress of God cannot be frustrated, neither can they come of naught. Despite this admonition, racial barriers have remained. In taking note of the separation between Latter-day Saint congregations in the black townships and in white areas, David Bly observed that very few Mormons, except for stake leaders, have ever attended church there, even though the distance is not more than a few miles. He added that white South Africans, like many other white South Africans, go about their daily lives relatively untouched by what happens in the black townships. Thus, it is not surprising that black South Africans have not embraced Mormonism en masse, even in the wake of the the Black Revelation of 1978. In 1982, according to one source, the number of black South African Mormons numbered 500 out of a total South African membership of 8,600. By 1986, the total number of South African Latter-day Saints, that is, the aggregate total, both black and white, had increased just slightly to just over 13,000. In the light of such modest figures, even the Church News has conceded that, quote, Africa has yet to become a missionary boom area. By contrast, Brazil, with its significant black population, has enjoyed, as I previously pointed out, much greater Mormon growth during the 10 years since 1978. Brazil, during this period, went from 50,000 to 300,000 members, a six-fold increase. But the role of blacks in this growth, while there, must be placed in proper perspective. It is true that some of this growth came as a direct result of the 1978 revelation and subsequent influx of black Brazilians into the church. A significant portion of these blacks came from northeastern Brazil, a region with a heavy concentration of blacks. Also, the church, by going after black Brazilians, moved towards a broader socioeconomic focus in its general missionary approach. According to Mark Grover, the foremost student of Mormon race relations in Brazil, the church up until 1978 had primarily concentrated its missionary efforts on upper and middle class Brazilians. But increased missionary activity among Brazilian blacks, a group whose socioeconomic status was somewhat lower, middle or lower middle class, helped to prompt the church to broaden its basic missionary focus. Grover, moreover, asserts that the primary reason for dramatic Mormon growth in Brazil has been due not to the black situation, but to dramatic socioeconomic transformation of that nation from a traditional to a modern industrialized society. This transformation has led to profound economic and social dislocation and geographic mobility, in which significant numbers of uprooted Brazilians have sought the stability and reassurance offered within the institutional framework of Mormonism. But such growth has been tempered by the fact that many of the restless, uprooted Brazilians who have joined the church have found it only a temporary sanctuary, thus somewhat skewing the total membership figures. Again, quoting Grover, of the 300,000 Brazilians currently on church membership rolls, only about 15 to 20% are what he described as a category of being very active. Another 30 to 40% are what he calls nominally active, and this was the most surprising statistic of all. A full 40 to 50% of this total have had little or no contact with the church. Among American blacks, the church has yet to make significant inroads. However, despite an exaggerated picture relative to demographic growth, the Church News has been more accurate in presenting blacks as significant motivators of other types of growth. One of these, quite obviously from what I've said, is geographic growth, the geographic expansion of the church. Mormon black interaction has significantly expanded the church's geographic boundaries, making it more than ever a truly international organization. During the 10 years since 1978, the Church News has wrote, I'm stuck, I'm tongue-tied, routinely reported Mormon activity in black areas throughout the world, including such exotic regions as Ghana, Zaire, the Mascarene Islands, Belize, the Lesser Antilles, a practice that would have been inconceivable just a few years earlier. Also, as a result of this geographic expansion into black areas, I think there's been a second significant development, and that would be that Latter-day Saints have developed a growing sensitivity to and willingness to concern themselves with various problems affecting black people within the United States and abroad. For example, in response to race riding that took place in Miami, Florida in 1980, the Church News published an editorial entitled, quote, "Get Rid of Hate." Went on to say, "This tragedy had taught America a great lesson. That is, we must get rid of hate. It can destroy us and will unless we put an end to racial conflict." Turning to racial strife abroad, church leaders used the occasion of the South African temple dedication in 1985 to address the race issue in that troubled nation. In the temple dedicatory prayer, President Gordon B. Hinckley called for peace in this troubled land, asking that those who rule in the offices of government be inspired to find a basis for reconciliation among those who are now in conflict one with another. A second equally serious area of distress the church concerned itself with was the South African famine of 1985. The Church News, through graphic descriptions and striking photographs, vividly chronicled the devastating effects of this tragic event, declaring, quote, "You can't just pretend that those suffering people are not there." Church leaders then moved to ease this human suffering in calling for a special one-day fast in January 1985 among the 4 million Mormons living in the United States and Canada. The money that these meals would have cost, some $6.5 million, was then put into a fund to benefit victims of the famine. A second Mormon fast in November 1985 yielded an additional $3.5 million. Distributed to East Africa famine victims. These special African relief fasts received notice in the national press. In summary, therefore, it is clear that the Church News has, with mixed accuracy, presented blacks as prime instruments of Mormon growth and expansion. It has been less than accurate in presenting blacks relative to demographic and population growth, but I feel has been much more accurate in a second related area of, that is, church geographic expansion into black areas heretofore unprobed. The Church News has also been more accurate in presenting Mormon black relations in a third area. That is the growth, or I would say perhaps maturing is a better term, of basic Mormon attitudes relative, sensitive to black people and their problems. Reflective of this evolving sensitivity was a recent Mormon forum column carried in the Church News, informing church members, quote, how to overcome prejudices and stereotypes. Also, on the succession of Ezra Taft Benson to the presidency of the church in November 1985, the Church News issued a statement on racial equality in an effort to allay general concern stemming from President Benson's past statements on racial matters. The church statement expressed Mormon concern for the well-being and equality of all men and women, and contained a direct statement from President Benson himself, expressing his personal, quote, overwhelming love and compassion, unquote, for all races and ethnic groups. President Benson's statement, I think, reflects a general Latter-day Saint capacity to outgrow old prejudices and manifest a greater awareness and sensitivity to the problems and needs of black people, both within and outside of the church, a tendency clearly projected through the pages of the church news over the past 10 years. I thank you.
Got your comments written out?
Has Chester Hawkins arrived? Apparently not. I think this will be a very good opportunity for us to just informally ask Dr. Bringhurst questions about his paper and related issues. Maybe I'll start off with one. I'd like to to see him play prophet for a second, if you would, Newell. From your analysis of the trends of the past 10 years, what would you think we'd see 10 years from now? Do you think the in growth and these areas that you've mentioned about sensitivity, do you see these things continuing and increasing?
Yeah, I feel that the two of the three trends at least will continue into the future. That is, I think there'll still be an increasing, growing sensitivity to not only some of the things that I talked about, but just a greater, I guess I consider myself, I'll stand up, I consider myself an eternal optimist. I feel that in the words of one of my close friends and colleagues who spoke last night, Armin Moss, he said what surprised him the most was the smoothness with which the whole question of accepting blacks in the church is taking place. There's been problems, true. I mean, he pointed out some of the problems and whatever, but I tend to concur in that it has been a fairly smooth process. There hasn't been, for example, the massive disaffections or the problems that if you look back to polygamy, with the abandonment of polygamy, I think that was a much more wrenching decision. Or if you look at our cousins in the reorganized church, they recently ordained women. You're probably perhaps aware of that. They're allowing the ordination of women in the reorganized church, and they've had whole congregations that have split away and everything else. And in the LDS church, you haven't seen this. You've seen problems, but I think you've seen also it's been very smooth. I think there'll be, looking down the line, I think this increased sensitivity and awareness will continue to down, maybe even a greater awareness and sensitivity to things like various aspects of black culture and so on. Some of the areas of insensitivity that still, that were pointed out last night that still exist. I think over time, these things don't take place overnight. People's attitudes don't, all of a sudden shift into a new gear. And as far as geographic expansion, I think that's surely going to continue. The church is continuing. I think probably 10 years from now, we'll probably see Mormon missions and a Mormon presence throughout black Africa. I think it's inevitable. I think all of black Africa will see Mormon activity. You can just see, just chronicling and tracing the progress just over the last 10 years has, I think, been quite dramatic. The same is true in the Caribbean, in the predominantly black areas of the Caribbean. I think you'll continue to see geographic expansion. As far as demographic growth, that is population growth, that's a harder area to speculate on. Because growth in the church has kind of been uneven. You get a spurt, and then maybe it levels off in a spurt. It's not a straight geometric progression. And so to predict where the actual numbers are going to go in Africa or in Latin America or in other parts of where blacks predominate, I wouldn't even venture a guess on it. Did that answer your question? No. Yes.
Has the rate of defection among new black converts been any greater than the rate of defection with non-black converts?
I'm not sure of that. I think my friend Armin Moss, he claims that it's I think he seems to feel it's somewhat greater. I haven't seen the comparative figures. I don't know any. Have you done any work in that area, Alan, Sherry? You're perhaps closer to that. The general rate of defection is quite high, just generally speaking, but I don't know if it's greater among blacks than amongst non-blacks. I haven't seen the comparative figures. I wish Armin were here. He could give you that information. I wouldn't even venture it. Yes?
I was struck last night by the statement of one of the black speakers that when black people come into the church, they still like Jesse Jackson and Martin Luther King and have been very much caught up in and concerned with that movement toward social change. And I was wondering, what do you see happening to that kind of movement toward social change as people come into an organization which seems more and more conservative and unchanging?
Yeah, that's what I see as kind of an ultimate Mormon paradox. Other writers have pointed that out, that the church, as we're all aware, over the last 10, I mean even going to the last 20 years, has ethnically become much more diverse. It's become much more of an international church, and it's no longer just a white American church, because you know the most dramatic growth has taken place abroad. And so you have an interesting situation. You have a very interesting situation where you've got a Latter-day Saint church that is becoming ethnically and culturally much more diverse, at the same time that you've got, as you point out, you've got a church that is becoming much more, in certain respects, much more standardized. You know, the standardized in terms of teachings, in terms of dealing with dissent, and dealing with some of these other things, and that presents somewhat of an anomaly. And you juxtaposition on that the fact that they've got a greater awareness of different cultures and different peoples, but the church itself perhaps, and that's one of the sources I think of Mormonism's strength, is that there's a certain amount of conformity that has to be enforced, I guess, to prevent schisms and divisions and so on, but at the same time it also makes for those tensions within the church itself, the tensions of dissent and disagreement and so on, and that's kind of been an ongoing theme throughout Mormon history. In fact, I had the opportunity to critique a paper in San Francisco which dealt with an early Mormon dissenter. Jesse was there. It was on Benjamin Winchester. He was coming up against these same kind of things. The church was becoming increasingly centralized. The power of the 12 was increasing. This was the time of Joseph Smith's death and so on. And so this has been something that's ongoing. And I don't know if I really answered your question. I've kind of talked around it. I don't know what that's going to lead to. I see on the one hand a church becoming more conformist and more conservative in dealing with dissent and certain forms of differences within. But yet on the other hand, a church which is becoming more tolerant, more sensitive to cultural, ethnic differences. That really, but I don't know where that's all going to lead. I could be a prophet if I could answer that question. Yes?
Along that line, I got out of high school in 1928. It took me 10 years to get through a degree in college. And I became quite a student of Russia until they marched on Finland. And quit reading about it more or less. But anyway, assuming that here's an assumption. Assuming that there is a democratic landslide nationwide, similar to one back in, I was an election judge back in the FDR days, how long before, what do you propose, assume on the church getting into Russia or proselytizing? in decades, maybe.
You mean looking toward the future?
I
would say that
this is still already getting into the black church.
Yeah, you mean the growth of the international, the church, the growth of the universal church. I'm sure you're all aware that that there was a great deal of publicity given recently to the fact that the church is now able to send missionaries into, I think it's Hungary, is it?
Hungary.
Yeah, it's Hungary, yeah. Yeah, that attracted national news coverage. It was carried in the newspapers down in where I live, down in California. And to answer your question, I think we probably will see the day when the church will go into various other iron countries. After all, there's a temple in the German Democratic Republic, and I think that I feel that the church will probably be able to if glasnost continues. I mean, it'll come from internal changes, I think, within the Soviet Union. I'm not a real student of Soviet history, although I've always been interested in international politics. But glasnost, if it continues, I think a logical end product of glasnost would be, that it'd become more from that than it would from developments
that
in this country. Well, that's the pipe dream of every Democrat. I wouldn't hold my breath, especially here in Utah. As they said last night, show me a Utah Democrat, and I'll show you a rare breed of cat. But anyway, I'm from California. Yes.
Could you comment on the attitude of the black African governments as far as allowing?
Well, I think they've had to work very carefully because there's the political situation down in looking at Africa is sometimes very volatile and very unstable. There's a lot of and so church leaders that have gone down there and the accounts that I've read have had to engage in very careful, very deliberate negotiations to get legal status in those African countries, and because there's some very difficult political forces down there to deal with, and so that's to me that seems like a measure of accomplishment in and of itself, that the church has been able to secure legal status just as it did in Hungary. That was involved some sensitive, difficult negotiations, as you're perhaps aware. And the same is true in South Africa. And so they have to be very careful. They have to be very careful in the South African countries and in dealing with the government. And then there's restrictions placed on, how many missionaries can go in there and where they can go. And because, as you're well aware, United States and Western nations are unique in the degree of personal freedoms. The First Amendment, the things we take for granted, First Amendment rights. They don't exist in a lot of those countries, and so that places the church in a very difficult position sometimes in the way they go out and preach and deliver the message. But I will add this: I think that it's probably not as difficult as it would be if missionaries went into the Islamic countries. I think the Islamic world, and not the communist world, just from my own observations, will be the last frontier. That's just my own personal, from what I've read. Pardon?
Yeah.
Yeah, the Islamic world.
Turkey,
Turkey or Saudi Arabia, can you imagine, approaching... Yeah. Yes?
Do you think Muhammad Ali will
join the Mormon Church? Well, Edward Cleaver joined the Mormon Church, although that's an interesting story in itself. I hadn't heard anything to that effect.
I have another question. In some of the areas where the church was the black to the strongest, are a larger percentage of our converts now in the United States coming in the black community? As I've traveled in the upper class, a lot of whites in the congregation, which may be a believer, getting quite a few converts.
Well,
I
think it's been a mixed result. I think the potential is there, but from what I've read, the progress amongst American blacks has been more modest, as I pointed out in my paper, than it has amongst blacks in other parts of the world.
I understand that, but baptism is a whole lot modest here in the United States, right? I was just wondering if that was a larger percentage of the baptism in the United States.
You mean amongst general people joining the church? No, I
don't have much growth in the church in the United States, missionary.
Well,
comparatively, there aren't many missions that are really working at
Buddhism. Yeah. Although from what I've seen, it appears that it's still much greater amongst whites. I don't know. Do you have any information on that? Is the number of black, you say a greater in aggregate numbers or rate?
I'm talking about in the areas where the black community is strong, such as the South and the larger cities, are we getting a larger percentage of black converts in those regions?
Yeah, well, I know in certain portions of the L.A. area, there's been significant growth. But if you look at a place like Washington D.C., you know that there hasn't. In fact, one of the articles that appeared in that was in this AP series that came out had an in-depth essay by David Briscoe on the Washington D.C. The blacks living in the Washington D.C. area, and they said that the core city had sort of languished in terms of growth That was an area where there weren't very many blacks, and actually what they had done with the Washington D.C. ward was divide it up and put it in, you know, like a pie, you know, divide it up and put it down into suburbs and so on. And so I think it's varied from city to city. In urban areas, I guess there's been significant growth in the L.A. area, from what I understand. There's been significant growth in Chicago, but in other places it's been uneven. But I don't know about comparing, you know, the percentages or the rate or the numbers of white versus blacks in the United States. I would tend to think that it's still greater in terms of aggregate numbers amongst whites, because you've got so many more white, a much bigger base to start from, you know, and whereas the rate amongst blacks might be higher because you started from such a narrow base. I don't know if that really answers your question. I guess we got to break up. It's what, 9:30? Yeah. Thank you for coming.
Yes. Thanks very much, Professor Bringhurst. And we have 15 minutes till the next session, and I'm sure he'll answer individual questions.
Well, thanks a lot, Howard.
This is the end of this cassette. Please advance the tape as far as possible for the next playing.